commentary, audio production, interviews, and so much more. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
There are certain cities in the world that are story towns. San Francisco, New York, Paris, for example. They inspire writers whose stories about them in turn embellish their tradition. With all due respect, Des Moines, Iowa has yet to produce an Ambrose Bierce, or Buffalo, New York, an O. Henry. And without Paris, there certainly would never have been a Victor Hugo. But the greatest story town of them all is London. The very mention of its name conjures up a host of images. Fog and the clip-clop of a hansom cab in a midnight street. Scotland Yard, a lovely lady in durance vile. A villain with an Oxonian accent. A hero in white tie and tails. And murder. Of such elements is our story constructed. And one other. It concerns a man who, though murdered, refuses to remain dead. Listen, listen then as Mr. and Mrs. James Mason star in The Dealings of Mr. Markham, which begins in just a moment.
If it's new, Plymouth's got it.
Got it.
The 59 Plymouth's got it if it's new.
If it's new, if it's new.
The 59 Plymouth is at your Plymouth dealers now. It's new, it's wonderful, and it's here. New styling to make your heart sing. Plymouth for 59 has that fine car look. New Fury models at new lower prices. New swivel seats. Swing you in when you enter, swing you out when you leave. New push-button heater, world's simplest temperature control. New Golden Commando V8, biggest engine in the low-price field. New Miramatic mirror. New automatic headlight dimmer. New sport deck. New everything. See the completely new 59 Plymouth. Drive the completely new 59 Plymouth at your Plymouth dealers now.
And now, The Dealings of Mr. Markham, starring James and Pamela Mason. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I make this deposition of my own free will, with the certain knowledge that Scotland Yard, without my assistance, could never have proven me a murderer. Since the fact of the matter is, I was the murder victim. You must know that some years ago in Bond Street, not far from Piccadilly, was a quiet little shop which was identified only by a small and very discreet sign which bore the words Charles Markham, dealer in antiques. In the shadowy interior beyond the mullioned windows was a confusion of treasures, mostly genuine, and always the rustled ticking of 100 clocks. Late one summer evening, when the shutters were long closed on those windows, a hansom cab turned into the foggy, gaslit street and came to a halt in front of the shop.
That's all, cabby. You needn't wait.
Very good, miss. Good night.
Good night. Must be here. He must be. I won't go back to that place. I'll kill myself first.
Look here, old man. You needn't... Oh. I beg your pardon.
And I beg yours. I'm not the person you were expecting, am I?
No, madam. As a matter of fact, I was expecting a police officer.
A police officer?
Merely an old friend who drops in now and then for some talk and a drink.
You are Mr. Markham.
Yes. My name is Markham. What can I do for you?
I want to come in. I want to buy a present for somebody.
Really, madam? It's nearly midnight. Surely tomorrow morning.
Oh, that'll be too late. This is a special occasion. It's a birthday present, you see. A birthday present. I've got to deliver it at breakfast. And Sir George Lytell says this is the only place in London to buy antiques.
Sir George flatters me. One moment while I put some lights on.
No, please. That one little light will be enough.
But you won't be able to see very much.
Oh, that doesn't matter. I'll trust your judgment.
Just as you like. This way, madam.
What's that? That noise?
You mean the clocks, madam? There are more than 100 clocks in this room.
Don't they get on your nerves? Ticking away together like a nightmare?
No, I'm very fond of them. Might I interest you, perhaps, in a clock?
No, I hate them.
All the same, this grandfather clock might amuse you.
I didn't come here to be amused.
Nevertheless, observe the signature. Johannes Carver, Londini, Fakit, Anno Domini, 1752. You'd see better, madam, if you raised that veil.
I'll keep my veil down, thanks.
Just as you please. But look at the clock. I open the glass face like this. I push the hand forward like this, and...
What was that voice?
Only the clock, madam. Nothing more.
The clock spoke.
Clever, isn't it? A device of old John Carver, anticipating Mr. Edison's gramophone by more than a century. But then you said you didn't like clocks.
Not by the hundreds.
Well, then, it's a business. May I ask whether the present you're seeking is for a lady or a gentleman?
It's for a gentleman.
Has he some knowledge of antiques?
No. Yes. I mean...
Perhaps porcelain, bronzes, tapestry, weapons?
He might be very much interested in weapons, yes.
Then I imagine his name is Mr. Ronald Gilbert. Will you tell me, Miss Ray, why you really came here tonight?
So you know who I am.
Naturally. You're Miss Judith Ray. Why did you come here?
I wanted to see what sort of a man you actually were.
And you found out?
No. But I won't go back to prison. I won't.
That's entirely up to you. But since this is a business conference, Miss Ray, and I imagine it is...
Yes?
Then suppose we go into my office here at the back of the shop. After you.
Thank you.
You must excuse the dust covers I've put on the chairs here. I'm leaving for a holiday tomorrow and the shop will be closed. When I return next week, Miss Ray, I shall expect the amount requested. In cash, of course.
But I can't raise £2,000. You ought to know that.
Your fiancé could raise the money, I imagine.
Ron? Do you think I'd have Ron know where I've been and what I've been?
It's better than having his father learn it, surely. Sit down, Miss Ray.
I'd rather stand, thank you.
That's a very foolish gesture, but ladies will do it. They think it gives them dignity and shows their disdain of the poor blackmailer. You see, I make no bones about it. I am a blackmailer.
You seem rather proud of yourself.
Why not? I'm the one person in England, perhaps in the whole world, who's made it a large-scale business.
Congratulations.
What is all life but blackmail? The little girl says... If you don't give me that, I'll scream. The grown woman says, if you go on behaving like this, I'll leave you. Your sex, Miss Ray, are blackmailers from the cradle.
I wonder, Charles Markham, if anybody has ever hurt you very much.
Hurt me? What do you mean?
When you talk like that, your face goes white under the eyes. You pick up that letter opener from the desk...
Not a letter opener, please, Miss Ray. A Medici dagger. 16th century work.
It isn't the money that really interests you, is it?
I don't understand.
You hate the world. You just want to torture people as you think you've been tortured. Isn't that so?
This is a very sharp dagger, Miss Ray. If I throw it down on the desk, it sticks. Like that.
Isn't it so, Charles Markham?
My motives, Miss Ray, are not in question.
I wonder.
Whereas your motives are. Now, let me see. 10 years ago, a certain girl called Letty Wilson, your real name, I believe, fell in love with a rather contemptible underworld character named Arthur Akers.
Please.
No humiliation was too great for her. She worked for him, lied for him, stole for him.
I was only 18. I didn't know what I was doing.
This girl, for a very shabby theft, was sentenced to 3 years hard labor in Holloway Prison. 5 months later, she escapes from prison and disappears. And now, after all these years, she pops up in the West End as Miss Judith Ray, fashionable milliner.
Haven't I made up for it? Haven't I?
No.
For one mistake after 10 years?
That's the way of the world, my dear. I didn't create it. And I'm forgetting the best part of the comedy. This paragon of virtue next falls in love with Mr. Ronald Gilbert, son of Major General Sir Edmund Gilbert. Such a respectable family, too.
Oh, stop it, please.
Then shall we say £2,000?
Suppose I did raise the money. I don't know how, but suppose I did raise it.
Well?
What guarantees would I have that you wouldn't ask for still more money?
I probably shall ask for more money, Miss Ray. That's my privilege as a blackmailer.
And am I never going to be free of you? Is that it?
Frankly, that's it.
Unless I kill you, of course. What if I did kill you?
People have threatened that before, but they haven't meant it.
Maybe I mean it.
Well, we can easily test you out. There's a sharp knife stuck in the desk in front of you. I'm going to get up and deliberately turn my back on you. Like this.
Be careful, Charles Markham.
As a student of human nature, I'm curious. How much will you risk to keep this secret? Have you the courage to kill and risk hanging?
Yes, I think I have. Oh, what was that?
Aren't you glad you held back at the last moment, Miss Ray?
I said, what was that?
That, my dear, was the front doorbell. Probably my friend Inspector Ross from Wigmore Street Police Station. Come in, old man. Make yourself comfortable. I'll be with you in a moment.
You wanted me to try and kill you, didn't you?
No, I was merely curious. And in any case, Miss Ray, it would have been useless to kill me.
Useless? Why?
Because I shouldn't die.
Don't talk rot.
No, it's quite true. A man in my position must take certain precautions. If you killed me, I should be back to haunt you within half an hour. And I don't happen to be joking. Come in.
Here's actress Joan Bennett.
It's terrible to try to act with a dreadful cold. To feel better quickly, I take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve nasty cold distress.
Yes, tests of four leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting of all. Amazing four-way starts in minutes to relieve aches, pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When you catch cold, try my way. Take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve cold distress.
Four-way, 29 and 59 cents.
Here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Do you know you can actually improve the appearance of your hair while you free yourself from itchy, unsightly dandruff? It's true. Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo contains no harsh ingredients whatever, yet it reaches right down to the scalp to get rid of every trace of embarrassing dandruff. Guaranteed with just one lathering. And note this, Fitch Shampoo can also make your hair much brighter, as much as 35% brighter. So remember this about Fitch Shampoo. It positively removes dandruff, as it definitely acts to brighten hair. Use it regularly.
And now, starring James and Pamela Mason, Act Two of The Dealings of Mr. Markham.
Look here, Markham, Good Lord, Judith.
Mr. Ronald Gilbert, what a nice surprise.
Ron, what are you doing here? He hasn't got anything on you, has he?
Speak up, Mr. Gilbert. Have I?
Well, the fact is, Judith,
Look at him, Miss Ray. See how he changes color, twists his moustache, and altogether resembles a boy caught at the jam cupboard. The perfect picture of a gentleman being a gentleman.
Well, look here, Markham. I'm not very clever. You can always make a fool of me when you start talking, so let's stop talking, huh? I brought the money.
What money?
My fee for keeping quiet about you.
So you went to Ron, too. You told him about it.
Naturally, in my business, it's good business to sell your wares in two markets, if you possibly can.
How much money?
Well, never mind, Judith. I hoped I could do this without your knowing.
How much money?
3,000. That's all I could raise.
Has he told you who I am and what I've been?
Now, look here, Judith. Who the devil cares who you are or what you've been? I happen to be in love with you and I... Well, never mind. Let's get out of here.
Ron, it's no good. He'll only come back for more money.
Well, I know that, but what else can we do?
Nothing, I'm afraid. May I have that envelope with the money, please?
Here you are. Take it.
Thank you. As I explained to Miss Ray, I'm leaving tomorrow for a holiday. I'm glad we could settle this affair before my departure, and as you say, like gentlemen.
I don't suppose you can help being what you are, Markham, but never again. as long as you live.
Yes. Never even say that word, gentlemen.
Be careful, Ron. Look at his face.
Tell me, Mr. Gilbert, how much money is in this envelope?
I told you, £3,000.
Then take it back. I find we can't make a deal after all.
What do you mean?
Just what I say. Here's your money. You will now oblige me, both you and Miss Ray, by leaving my shop.
But I don't understand. What are you going to do?
Tomorrow morning, perhaps even tonight, I'm going to get in touch with the police. I shall tell them where they can find Letty Wilson, alias Judith Ray.
You can't do that, Markham.
Oh, yes, he can. You've hit him where it hurts.
£3,000 or 30 cannot buy you the right to insult me. I'll show you to the door.
You're not going to tell the police, Markham. I promise you that.
And how are you going to stop me?
With this?
Ron, put that gun away.
So both of you, it appears, came here under false pretenses. You said you wanted to pay me some money.
Oh, the money's still there, but you've lost your chance to get it.
And our dear Judith said she wanted to buy a present for you. I showed her this grandfather clock here. This talking clock.
Don't go a step beyond that clock, Markham, I warn you.
Nonsense, old man. You wouldn't dare shoot.
Wouldn't I?
No, and I'll call your bluff.
Ron.
I know your whole silly tribe, my friend. You wouldn't risk it. Your life, your family position, you wouldn't.
Ahead. Why is the favorite son trailing his opponent in one area while a dark horse candidate surges far ahead in another? What are the issues that concern Americans most? What kind of legislation can we expect in Congress during the 2 years ahead? What impact will the new arrangement in Congress have on the White House, on the State Department? How will Tuesday's voting influence convention delegates when they meet to nominate a presidential ticket 2 years hence? These are the questions that make this election so exciting. These are the questions our team of CBS newsmen will keep in mind Tuesday night as we bring you the whole election story. Find out what's happening at the polls from CBS newsman Robert Trout. Find out why it's happening from CBS News chief Washington correspondent Eric Severide. Follow the election predictions made by UNIVAC, the famous electronic brain, as they're reported by Douglas Edwards of CBS News. Tuesday night on CBS Radio.
And now, starring James and Pamela Mason, Act 3 of The Dealings of Mr. Markham.
Oh, Ron, Ron, what have you done?
Steady, my dear. We'll find a way out of this.
Maybe he's not dead, Ron.
Oh, he's dead, all right. It's shot through the heart. Bullet went clean through him and smashed the face of the grandfather clock.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Wait a minute. There may be a way out.
What way?
He said he was going for a holiday. That means his absence won't be noticed. The shop will be closed. Nobody will come here for days, and certainly nobody will come here tonight.
Oh. What's that?
The police officer. I forgot the police officer.
What police officer?
A friend of Markham's, Inspector somebody from Wigmore Street. He was expecting him.
Well, then we're finished.
Oh, could you... Could you pick up the body and carry it?
Yes, I suppose I could. Why?
Well, there must be a back way out of this shop. Probably through the office.
Yes, all right. I don't like to touch him.
Oh, hurry, Ron. Hurry.
He's as heavy as a sack of meal, and he seems to be looking straight at me.
No. Did you see the expression in his eyes just before you...
No, I didn't.
He seemed to be looking behind us or beyond us. I don't know how to describe it. He said something, too, that scared me. He said he couldn't die. He said...
Oh, will you close the door quickly?
The back door. Where? Oh, there it is. Oh, locked. It's locked.
Isn't there a key?
No.
Look, perhaps in his pockets on a key ring.
Oh, there isn't time, Ron. The police, they'll break down the front door.
I've got it. The dust covers on the chairs.
What on earth are you talking about?
We used to play a game when we were children. Somebody sits in a big chair, you fit the dust cover over him, and nobody can tell he's sitting there. Don't you see, Judith? That's how we can hide Markham's body.
It might work.
It's got to work. Take the cover off that big wing chair.
All right.
And I'll put him into it. I'll put the cover back again and pull it down around his feet.
But don't let it touch his chest. The blood will show through.
That's got it. You can't see anything now, can you? Just in time. Come in.
Good evening, Miss Ray. Good evening, Mr. Gilbert.
Charles Markham. You're Charles Markham.
Correct, Miss Ray. But why should that surprise you? Why do you look as though you were seeing a ghost?
Because we are seeing a ghost. If you're Charles Markham, whose body
is... Judith, be careful. Body, Miss Ray? Did you say body?
Miss Ray is upset. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
If you killed me, I should be back to haunt you within half an hour. That's what you said.
I tell you, Miss Ray isn't herself. I had bad news today. A relative of hers died, and I've been trying to console her.
And did you think it would console her to bring her to my shop?
Well,
you must agree the situation's a little odd. I come in here and find you two looking as guilty as a pair of murderers in my private office in the middle of the night.
Well, there's nothing odd about it. I wanted to buy Judith something.
At midnight?
Yes, why not?
May I ask how you managed to get in?
The front door was open. We just...
If you wished to buy something, why not stay in the showroom? Why come to my office?
Well, hang it all. You don't think we wanted to steal anything?
Well, the thought did occur to me. You said there was nobody else here?
Well, there's nobody here, Mr. Markham. Not a living soul.
Then you didn't by any chance meet my brother.
Your brother?
Yes, my brother Robert. You couldn't have mistaken him if you had seen him. He looks so much like me that few people can tell us apart.
Oh, then that's it.
Poor Robert often deputizes for me. He's learned to act like me, think like me, talk like me. But he doesn't like the work much. Of course, you know what my work really is.
If this part of the game, are you playing cat and mouse with us?
Robert is an idealist. He thinks, poor fellow, that my profession is beneath contempt. But he acts the part, acts it very well, because I pay him. And I find it useful to have a double who'll run risks for me. What have you done with the body?
We haven't done anything with him.
If you've killed Robert, my friend, you've committed a totally useless murder.
Well, you don't see him here, do you?
No. But I see his handiwork.
Meaning what?
I've warned him many times about throwing a knife down on a polished desktop. No scratches on the desk are fresh scratches. Of course, if you give me your word of honor that he's not here...
Well, of course he's not here.
Well, in that case, all we can do is sit down and make ourselves comfortable. You sit over there, Mr. Gilbert, and you, Miss Ray. How about that wing chair by the window?
I prefer to stand, thank you.
And perhaps you don't mind if I sit in the wing chair. It's a very comfortable one. My brother always
don't
says...
sit there.
So that's it.
Yes, that's it.
It is rather a thick chair. I press against the dust cover.
Oh, what's the use of going on with this? I killed him.
You admit that?
Yes, I admit it. But Judith had nothing to do with this. I swear she hadn't.
My telephone, you notice, is against the wall. I shall have to turn my back to you when I ring.
Ring where?
Wigmore Street Police Station.
Give him a chance. Please give him a chance.
Hello, operator. I want Regent 0586.
I won't let them take you, Ron. I won't.
No good, Judith. I killed a man. I meant to kill him, and that's all there is to it. Very sensible attitude, my friend. And if the lady has any idea of flying at me with that knife, just notice what I've got here. A 32 revolver, one chamber fired. Picked up off the floor in that other room where... Oh, hello. Wigmore Street Police Station.
For the last time, Mr. Markham, won't you give him a chance?
Be quiet, Miss Ray. May I speak to Inspector Ross, please? Hello, Inspector. Charles Markham here. I understood you were going to drop in and see me tonight. Oh, I see. Well, naturally, business before pleasure. As a matter of fact, I rang up to make sure that you wouldn't come here tonight. Now, I've got a lot of work to do. I'm leaving for Eastbourne early tomorrow morning. Let's make it some other time, shall we? No, Inspector. It's very quiet hereabouts. Quiet as the grave, you might say. Never known such a peaceful night. Goodbye.
Why did you do that? Is this some more trickery?
Trickery? How can it be?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
I should call it generous when I let my poor brother's death go unavenged.
You're not doing this without a reason.
Naturally not.
Has it occurred to you, either of you, that I might not want my business dealings revealed in court?
What are you driving at?
Has it also occurred to you that a man's double, who looks exactly like him and shares all his secrets, may become a danger rather than an asset?
You're glad he's dead.
Not glad, but definitely relieved.
Fella, look here, you can't get away with this.
Get away with it, sir? Aren't you forgetting that you are the murderer?
Well, then what are you going to do?
It's very simple. We three, in an unholy partnership, will dispose of Robert's body. Or would you rather hang?
He's got us wrong. There's no other way.
How can we dispose of the body?
It seems worse than killing him. It's filthy cold.
Come, Mr. Gilbert. There's no time for squeamishness. You should be grateful to me for assisting you in the disposal of the evidence of your crime. Shall we get at it? And so, before the night was over, the body of my brother Charles was consigned to the ebbing tide of the Thames, never to be seen again. That's right, my brother Charles. Robert Markham did not die that night. I am Robert. I killed Charles. There were two shots that night. Gilbert fired and missed. And at the same moment, I fired from the door of the office and did not miss. That was why my brother looked past those two. He was looking into the barrel of my gun. I killed him to stop forever the wholesale blackmail that was poisoning the lives and breaking the hearts of 100 hopelessly frightened people. I destroyed his records, burned his correspondence, and assumed his identity, proud that I'd been of anonymous service to his many victims. Had I been my brother's twin in spirit as well as in body, that would have been the end of the matter. But Charles and I differed in this respect. He had no conscience. I could not forget that young Ronald Gilbert would live his life and go to his grave believing that he was a murderer. I brooded upon this for a long, long time, and at last have decided to make this confession, releasing him from his burden and assuming what is rightfully mine, the sin of fratricide. Further, deponent sayeth not.
Suspense, in which James and Pamela Mason starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Dealings of Mr. Markham, written by John Dixon Carr. In just a moment, the names of the supporting players and a word about...
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/Discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at Discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Lights out. A summer revival of some of the best stories in the series, which many of our listeners will remember. Tonight's story, the fourth in the current series, is called The Battle of the Magicians.
Lights out. Everybody. This is the witching hour. When dogs howl and evil is let loose on a sleeping world. Sit in the dark now and listen to Lights Out.
Mr. Saladin, is it true?
True? What makes the thing true, Irene? Because you believe in it, or because a million others believe in it, or... I can tell you this. The Penal Code of Haiti contains a section promising death to any who create zombies. And if the sober lawmakers of the country believe enough of it to put it into their books of law, well, then...
But it's impossible to raise the dead, Mr. Saladin.
Impossible? I wonder. The folklore of every country is full of tales of bringing the dead back to life, bringing them back to serve the living. There are tales of vampires, ghosts, werewolves.
But they're superstitions. Surely you don't...
Who am I, my dear Irene, to say where truth ends and superstition begins?
I'd like to know some more about zombies.
I've told you all that is known of them. How they are living, yet not living, dead. How they are summoned from the grave by the black magic of some sorcerer. How they must do his bidding until he wearies of them.
But must these poor dead people... Well, I mean, isn't there ever any rest for them? Can't they...
Can they not die again? Yes, there is a way. Zombies eat, you know, even as human beings do. But only when they are fed. They will not seek food for themselves. And if they eat salt, if anything containing salt so much as passes a zombie's lips, then he must return forthwith to his grave.
Oh, but Mr. Saladin...
That's the tale, Irene. I do not make it up.
But...
Look you, these creatures of the darkness... These unholy beings of superstition, they must obey laws. Nature has its laws, so there are laws of the supernatural. Immutable laws that all its creatures must obey, even as we creatures of nature must obey ours. You speak of superstition.
But superstition is just belief.
Ah, it is so. But we have been taught only in recent years to believe in certain things that science has learned. The germ theory of disease, for example...
But that's true, Mr. Saladin.
Perhaps, yes. I do not deny it. There is ample proof. There is also ample proof of the existence of supernatural beings, if one will take the trouble to look for it.
Not proof.
Proof, indeed. But, it appears we have a visitor, Irene.
Yes, sir. I'll see who it is, Mr. Saladin. Mr. Joseph Warner, president of Acme Airlines, Mr. Saladin.
So? Show him in then, please.
Yes, sir. Mr. Saladin will see you, Mr. Warner.
Thank you.
Good morning to you, Mr. Warner.
Yes, Aladdin?
Saladin, yes.
You're some kind of detective.
Some people have been, shall I say, kind enough to describe me as an investigator.
I hear that you're good.
Thank you. Won't you sit down? And so you have come to consult me about the recent wrecks of your airplanes, Mr. Warner.
How did you... Oh, yes, the newspapers, of course. Well, that's right, Mr. Saladin.
So?
You read about that one yesterday?
Yes.
14 killed, including the crew of 3. Absolutely no explanation for it.
Except what you know, Mr. Warner.
Well, what?
I said except what you know about it.
What do you mean
by... You would not have come to me, Mr. Warner, unless... Well, suppose you explain.
I'd like to know how you knew that.
It is my business, sir. Yes, Irene?
The window washer, Mr. Saladin. Can he come through your office?
Very well. One moment, Mr. Warner.
Excuse us, please. I got to get the window washed.
That is a job I would not like very well, I'm afraid, Mr. Warner. But to your business. You received a warning,
Yes, I received it. How did you know that?
I have some knowledge of the ways in which Dr. Ehrlich works, Mr. Warner.
Ehrlich? That's the name.
I was rather certain. You may read the letter. It was a letter, I assume.
Yes. There were two of them. The first one a week ago. It said, "This Dr. Ehrlich had need of $100,000... And the letter warned if I didn't come across, one of our ships would be wrecked."
And you assume this was a crank letter, and did nothing about it?
That's right. We get a lot of fool letters.
And because you took that attitude, 14 people are dead. Horribly dead.
Yes.
You said there were two letters.
Yes, here's the other one.
Mm-hmm. "Today, the tornado. Take warning." And Alec's signature. The tornado was the name of the airplane that crashed
Yes, John Elliott was piloting it. The oldest, safest pilot on the line. I can't understand it.
I can, Mr. Warner.
You can.
Tell me, when did you receive this letter?
About 5 minutes before the flash came that the tornado had crashed.
He timed it very well.
Yes, I...
Did you make any effort to trace this letter?
No, why? Well, there was so much excitement around the office,
Of course. And so what do you wish me to do?
I haven't given this to the police, Mr. Saladin. The publicity, you know. People would think it's easy to smash one of our airliners. You understand?
Yes. You wish me to find Alec, to...
What you do with him, Mr. Saladin, is no concern of mine, provided no more such things occur.
Mr. Warner, I know Alec of old. His life is forfeit 1,000 times older. But he, you yourselves have an old proverb. First catch your rabbit.
You catch him, Saladin. It'll be worth your while.
Yes. Yes, it will be very much worth my while, my friend.
Can you get to work at once, Mr. Saladin? You can understand. We're upset.
I understand. I promise nothing, Mr. Warner, except that I will try. No man may do more.
Oh, that's all that I can ask. You'll go after him, then?
It is agreed.
Good. You have a cigar? What's this?
Let me see that. Let me see it.
How the devil did that get in my pocket?
Ah. Read it yourself, Mr. Warner.
Oh, yes, sir. You have been very foolish to go to Saladin. Now your fate is sealed. I will destroy your airplanes one by one. And when the time comes, yourself. I have fought with Saladin before, as he well knows. This time is the last, Eric.
So, my friend, you have brought upon yourself.
He knows. How could he?
Down on the floor, quick! Score one for Saladin, I think.
But what
our delightful friend, the window washer. I just caught sight of... Let us see what has happened.
Good Lord, Saladin, do you think...
A crowd gathers in the street below. Morbid gazers on sudden death.
O'clock, Mr. Saladin.
Thank you, Irene. If you are ready.
You won't hurt me, Mr. Saladin.
I give you my word, Irene.
I'm afraid.
You need have no fear. No harm can come to you while I live.
I do want to help you, Mr. Saladin. Only
listen to me one moment, Irene. Of 50 girls who applied for this position, I selected you. I've not told you why.
No, I never could understand.
It was for one reason, Irene. You have the little, oh so very little, psychic spark that is lacking in all the other ones who came. You do not know it yourself, but Saladin knows. I must use you, but I shall not unless you consent wholeheartedly.
I'll do it, Mr. Saladin. I trust you.
You will not lose by it, my child. Look, then, we have a little time. Sit here. Sit comfortably. So, now we begin. Look into the crystal. Look deep into it, my child. Say over and over to yourself. Early. Early.
Early.
Early.
Early. Early.
Seek out the soul of Eric the magician while he sleeps. Go and find him, Irene. Find Eric. Find Eric. Search deep in the crystal globe. Eric.
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 Who calls Eric?
It is I, Saladin, that calls Eric.
What do you want, Saladin.
You will tell me where I shall find you, Eric.
No, I shall not.
You will tell, Eric?
No.
I am master of your soul that wanders now while your body sleeps, Eric. You will tell me where to find you.
I will not.
Tell me?
No. No.
Tell me.
In the tower. In the tower. I will not tell more.
You will, Eric. Tell me.
In the tower. The highest tower of all.
And where is it, this tower?
I will not tell more. I will not.
Tell, Eric.
I will not. I will not tell.
I say you shall, Eric.
I will not tell. Beware. Your power wanes now, Saladin.
Be sure you will not remember what you have told Alec when you awake.
I will remember.
By the five names I commanded, Alec, you will not remember.
I will not remember.
Alec.
Awake now, Irene. Awake, Irene. Awake.
Are you all ready now, Mr. Saladin?
Just sit quietly and rest, my child. So, Eric, I think perhaps we shall have a little talk together.
LeBlanc in Trip 5. Radio check, please.
KCT to LeBlanc in Trip 5 on the line. Okay.
LeBlanc to KCT. How are you, Shorty?
KCT to LeBlanc. Okay, Frenchie. Who's your pilot today?
LeBlanc to KCT. I do not know yet. Charlie Butler is sick all of a sudden. That is what I wait for.
KCT to LeBlanc. Better see your records are straight before you take off, Frenchie.
LeBlanc to KCT. That is not my business, Shorty, my friend. I am just co-pilot. I pull up the landing gear, sometimes land. I just go along for the ride.
KCT to LeBlanc. Okay, Frenchie. Jazz your motors when your pilot's ready. I'll check you off. That's all, KCT.
Are you the co-pilot on this trip?
You scare me a little bit. Yes, sir. You are a pilot?
I am the pilot. Yes. We are ready to take off.
We are ready long time. Your papers are all right?
The manifest is all right. Yes.
I am Francis LeBlanc.
Yes.
Unlimited. Visibility unlimited. Temperature 44. Dew point 28. Barometer 29-90. Okay to take off. KCT to LeBlanc. Bye.
LeBlanc to KCT. Merci, Shorty. I see you Thursday. LeBlanc to KCT. Bye.
Happy landings, Frenchie.
Only one, monsieur. You want to take off, eh?
I will take off. Yes.
Oui. Voilà.
Up gear.
Up gear, sir.
You have checked everything, LeBlanc.
I have checked everything. We are all right. Just long buggy ride. 10 passengers, mail, express.
Right.
How you like this brain, huh?
All right.
Excuse me, I do not think I catch your name, please.
My name is Ott. Edward Ott.
I am pleased to meet you, Monsieur Ott.
You know what? I think I remember that name. There was a pilot named Arte died 2 weeks ago on east end of the line.
Is that so?
Oui, it is so. He's a relative of you, Monsieur?
No, he is not relative.
So? You like me to fly her a little while?
No. I am pilot of this ship. I will do the flying.
Ça va, monsieur.
So, you did find me after all, Saladin. A very clever Saladin. Well, I think this time the very clever Saladin has had his last adventure, no?
I do not believe you will win, Alec.
No? I do, my dear enemy. I have not time now to find out you learned where my laboratory is, but there is time enough for that.
It is simple enough, Alec. You talked in your sleep, you see.
I remember now. I knew I had dreamed.
But I forbade you to remember, Alec.
Yeah, well, one little victory. I've waited a long time for this, Saladin.
Yes, and failed a great many times.
I will not fail this time.
What is written is written. I should be interested in how you caused that airplane to crash yesterday, Alec.
Yes. It was so simple, Saladin. I am amazed at a man of your attainment.
I think I know.
Well, I shall show you very soon. You will not tell anyone about it, I think.
I wonder.
They said there was no clue to the crash, Saladin.
Yes?
Would you like to know how?
I think I know.
Oh? Well?
You too know something of black magic?
I know a great deal of black magic, my friend. Shall I show you? Are you afraid of snakes, Saladin?
No, Erin.
Let us see. This bit of paper. Twist it. So. And you see it is but paper, Saladin. But now, look at it.
A cobra. You are clever, Alec. And look now. Harmless paper again.
Now.
I am not entirely powerless, Alec, even though my hands are bound.
How did you? I thought that only one man in the world.
Perhaps I am the man, Alec. Look at the paper closely again.
I fear I underestimate.
You see? It really is the snake, Alec.
Curse you! I'll have your heart for that.
Perhaps. But perhaps you had better get to your zombies again.
Zombies? How did you know?
It is possible that I read your mind, Alec.
So? Well, you have guessed it. I told that fool Warner that I would smash every one of his planes. Now, even now, he is about to lose another.
So? And how do you propose to do it, may I ask?
Read my mind, Saladin.
You challenge me?
Yes.
Very well, then. I read this. A living dead man is at the controls of the ship you intend to destroy. I do not know how you propose to control him. Ah, radio. So he is to crash the ship full of passengers near an airport where all can see. I wonder...
Saladin, until now I have regarded you as a meddler. A man foolishly staking his life against great odds. I am not so sure of the odds now. Saladin, you and I...
No, Alec. Between you and me, there can be nothing but enmity. We are set apart to fight one another forever.
Between us, we could rule the world. Tomorrow, Saladin.
No, between us, there is always war.
Well, so be it, then. But look for no mercy from me. I will kill you as I would a rat, Saladin.
Agreed, if you can.
LeBlanc in 3-5. LeBlanc in 3-5. To Chicago. Special weather report, please. LeBlanc in 5. Bye for Chicago.
So, the first contact.
That is the ship, then?
That is the ship, yes.
That did not sound like the voice of a zombie, Ellie.
No. That is Miller, the co-pilot. He does the bidding of my dead man.
So,
and now the little drama begins. Will you listen?
It is your drama. Now.
Quite so, my friend. I must get to work. Ellick, calling pilot up in trip 5, Acme Airlines. Ellick, calling pilot up in trip 5, Acme Airlines.
Out in trip 5. I hear you.
Give your position.
5 miles southeast of Chicago.
Good. You will do as I tell you.
I will do as you tell me. Who is speaking, please? What is enough from you? Be silent.
Yes, sir, but... You are under pilot out's orders, LeBlanc. You will do as you are told.
Oh, you sacrilege.
Silent.
Yes, sir, but... Yes, sir.
Now, up. When you arrive above the Chicago airport, you are to circle the field 3 times full motor.
I am to circle the field 3 times full motor.
And then when I give the word, you are to climb to 2,000 feet.
I am to climb to 2,000 feet.
And then I will tell you when.
You will tell me when.
And you will dive the ship full motor into the ground in the center of the field.
I will dive the ship full motor into the center of the field.
That is all.
I know. Who is it that makes the...
Silence him.
You have thought of everything, Eric.
Yes. This pilot, he died 2 weeks ago. I secured his body.
You add grave robbery to your other crimes.
But of course. I must have one that was a pilot. And he obeys without question, you see.
So far, yes. But you have not won yet.
I am close enough, Saladin.
I wonder.
Ut, report your position.
Southwest of Chicago Airport. I can see the field.
Good. You are ready?
I am ready.
Your co-pilot?
He is here. He will not interfere.
Report when you are over the field.
I will report when I am over the field.
Bellick, what would you do if I told your zombie what to do?
Ut! You are to obey only Eric's commands.
I will obey only Eric's commands.
Do you mind if I talk to him?
Go ahead and try.
LeBlanc. LeBlanc.
Who calls?
Do you hear me, LeBlanc?
I hear you.
Est-ce que vous avez un monsieur de serre?
De serre, monsieur?
De serre, oui.
Peut-être, monsieur, mais pourquoi?
Stop. What did you say to him, Saladin?
You do not speak French, then, Eric?
Of course. Certainly.
Then you know that I asked him merely if there was anything he could do. And he replied that he could not.
Well, of course. But why did you...
I'm afraid that you are about to win, Nellie.
You admit it, then.
I am sorry.
It is too late now. It is too late, Saladin. I offered to join forces with you once. But now I am the master.
Not reporting. I am over Chicago Airport now.
Good. Begin your circles.
I will begin my circles.
Now, friend Saladin, we shall see. Perhaps we shall even hear the screams, the dying screams of the passengers in this doomed ship. It is a wonderful invention, this radio. True magic.
Yes, it is true magic.
You will tell me when you are ready, Eric.
I will tell you. Make your circles.
I am making a circle.
Do they see you on the field below?
Many people are coming out to watch.
Good. We will give them a show.
We will give them a show.
LeBlanc. LeBlanc.
Oui, monsieur.
You may speak to him as you wish, Saladin. It is too late now, and he is powerless.
Yes, I am afraid so, but... LeBlanc, avez-vous de serre?
Oui, monsieur. Il y a des petits gras ici de mon déjeuner, mais pourquoi?
Écoutez, le pilote, c'est un loup-garou.
Ah, c'est vrai, monsieur, mais...
Écoutez, va-t-il le serre sur ses lèvres, dans sa bouche, comprenez, vitement.
There is nothing you can do, LeBlanc.
Hutt, are you ready?
I am ready.
Vitement, vitement, LeBlanc.
Here, Mr. Hutt, taste a little of this salt.
Salt? What have you...
Listen...
LeBlanc, what? I take over. My work is for you is done. I go now. I go home.
Come back. Come back. Come back, I say.
Monsieur, I was just in time, monsieur.
So, you did it, eh, Saladin?
I did it, yes.
So, well, you have beaten me again. But this time...
It is late, Ellie.
You think so? You do not know Ellie.
I know that...
Ellie is very poor.
You will not think
of it. Have a
You are too late, gentlemen. I doubt that even Ellie could survive a 40-story fall.
Monsieur, where are you, monsieur? Where are you?
I am here, Leblanc. What happened?
Monsieur, when I did put the sword at his lips, as you will tell me of what he did say to me... Take over.
Yes, we heard him. Is the plane all right?
It is under control. I am circling.
Where is Ost? Where is the pilot?
I do not know. He left his seat and went up. Number one, somebody is not right.
Leblanc, what is it?
It is the cabin door. Someone has opened it.
Leblanc, what happened?
Monsieur, the pilot is jumped out. He is falling. He is going to land on the long runway.
Oh. Leblanc. Is your plane still all right?
Yes. I am all right. But I cannot land now. You understand. I will circle until I contact the control tower.
Of course, Leblanc. What is happening on the field?
People are running out toward the... Oh, mon Dieu, I...
Quick, Leblanc. What is it?
I do not believe what my eyes see. That broken dead body on the runway. Every bone in it must be smashed, but...
Yes, Leblanc. What is it?
That body, monsieur. It is crawling toward the cemetery that stands beside the field.
All right. You can turn them on now.
You have just heard Lights Out. This was the fourth in the series of revivals of the best stories of this famous series. In tonight's cast, you heard Everett Clark as Saladin, Tony Parrish as Alec, Meg Hahn as Irene, Duke Watson as Mr. Werner, Boris Aplon as Ott, Nathan Davis as LeBlanc, and Ernest Andrews as the radio operator. India is the setting of our story next Saturday night. You'll hear how a British sahib, wise in the ways of the Orient, wreaks a terrible revenge on a Chicago gangster who has wronged him. Of course, if you don't want to be scared stiff, you can always listen to something else. But if you're around about this time next Saturday night, tune in. Lights Out is produced and directed by Albert Cruz. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name?
They call me DJ Ray.
The Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. Tune in every Saturday mornings from 12:30 a.m. till late, right after the Medicine Show. Email us, CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. That's all the time we have tonight for Skald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here in Vancouver, please have a safe and happy weekend.